Welcome to Every Day is a Counter Day, or Counter Food Programming Day, or something.
You might not have recognized that voice.
And you might not have recognized that voice.
And you might not have recognized that voice. And that's because today, it's a crossover episode.
Woohoo!
I'm Anna Van Valen from the Every Day is a Food Day podcast, here with my co-host, Leah.
Hi, this is Leah Ballantyne. Lots of voices here, so we figured we should introduce ourselves.
And this is Shira Moskowitz, here with my co-host of Counter Programming with Shira and, you guessed it, Ariel. Her name is Ariel.
That's me. My name is Ariel.
We wanted to do a crossover episode because we love each other's shows, and we thought you would too. They've got similar vibes, friendships, and deep love of random facts.
So before we introduce you to today's food counter topic, Leah, can you tell the counties, that's what we call our fans, who are listening, what your podcast is all about?
For sure, Shira. So Every Day is a Food Day explores the fascinating stories behind the foods we love. In each episode, Anna and I pick out a food or drink and nerd out on its holidays, histories, and scandals. For example, in season one, we covered the incredible story of the Great Canadian Maple Syrup Heist. And we shared the history of the heroic donut lassies of World War I, who inspired National Donut Day. Anna and I love food stories because they're really people stories, and we love shining a light on hidden figures in food through these stories.
And Ariel, what about counter-programming? Can you enlighten our Food Day listeners?
I am so happy to. Here we go. Counter-programming was created as a COVID distraction cast to counter all of the bad news about the pandemic by covering topics with the word count or counter in their title. It's counter-programming. Get it? Thankfully, we seem to be turning a corner and more people have received the vaccine, but there's always bad news that needs countering.
So today, we're crossing our show feeds to explore something with count in the name that also goes really well with the food world. County fairs!
That's right. Ariel and Shira are going to tell us all about the history of county fairs.
Then Anna and Leah are going to tell us all about the reason most of us go to fairs. It's the food. And last but not least, we'll do some fair trivia.
Be sure to subscribe to both shows on your platform of choice. And if you already subscribe to both, you win. You win podcasts. Seriously, slide into our DMs to claim your prize.
You can follow us on Instagram at counterprogrammingpod.
And you can keep up with Every Day is a Food Day on Instagram and Twitter at Food Day Pod, or visit us at yumday.co/podcast.
All right, Shira and Ariel, tell us, where do county fairs come from?
Well, we'd like to start with the definition. Though most of us may know, we wanted to be extremely thorough for our section. So what is a fair?
A fair is a gathering of people for a variety of entertainment or commercial activities. One of the main features of a fair is that it's temporary.
More specifically, a county fair, also known as a county show in the UK, is a public event exhibiting the equipment, animals, sports, and recreation associated with agriculture and animal husbandry. And yes, I had to look up what animal husbandry was.
Wait, Shira, what is it? Give us a definition.
It is the breeding of animals.
Oh.
And so it's like caring for farm animals as well.
So it's like husband and wifery.
Yeah. I thought the term husbandry was weird, but I digress.
Now that we know what to expect at a fair, let's go back in time to learn about the history of the concept of fairs.
We'll start with the ancient Romans. We always do, don't we?
We really always do. It always goes back to them. The ancient Romans held fairs, which were treated as holidays, and people got to have a little vacation off from work. This next fact is very on brand for us at Counter Programming. So counties, you know what to expect here. To Food Day folks, get ready. We always infuse Judaism without meaning to into our podcast, and we just feel like our parents would be very proud because Shira's parents, for folks who don't know, she has two rabbi parents. Did you both know that?
What?
What? Yeah. No!
It's one of those things, and we've said this before, Ariel feels this very strongly, that it has nothing to do with me and yet defines everything about who I am.
I feel like that is a strong framework within which to grow up.
Yeah.
For sure. And that's why anytime we see a Jewish reference, even if it is one line, we must share it with our counties if it even remotely relates to the counter topic. And today we have a one-liner that remotely relates to the counter topic.
Well, neither Leah nor I are Jewish, so this is a breath of fresh air, yeah. And we want to hear
this
it.
This is great.
Well, apparently in the Roman provinces of Judea and Syria-Palestina, rabbis did not allow Jews to participate in fairs in certain towns because the religious nature of the fairs went against Jewish practices.
Just want to say that on Wikipedia, where this fact originates, we'll be honest about our sources, this fact, quote unquote, it said it called rabbis Jewish rabbis, which I found strange, so I cut that.
Yeah, so that's all we have on that, but we can't avoid a Jewish reference, so I guess...
Really not much to back that up. Really, I mean, look, it makes sense. Shira and I will often do this thing where when we find a fact and we try to justify that fact, so we'll be like, oh, it makes sense, right? Yeah, it makes sense. Here's why. Here are the inferences that we can draw, but it like doesn't. It might not make sense at all.
So let's fast forward a bit. Now we are in the Middle Ages, and fairs are treated as temporary markets that are crucial to long distance and international travel. And these fairs were often connected to Christian holidays. So we are, you know, open to every religion here on Counter Programming.
And now we're going to zoom ahead once again. We're going to go to modern times, to America's first county and state fairs, and to the modern concept of a fair and kind of what we're really talking about here today.
So America's first fairs took place in Trenton Township, New Jersey, in 1745, and were promoted by King George II for the buying and selling of livestock and other products. In 1798, counties in Ohio, started...
Ohio.
I went to Michigan, so I always have to say go blue if I'm going to say Ohio. But anyways, in 1798, counties in Ohio started hosting fairs, except, and this to me, this I love, they called their fairs jollifications.
I love that.
You're going out for the day. You're like, hey, Ma, I'm going to the jollifications.
I think that we could definitely create a petition in line with this podcast for renaming county fairs to county jollifications.
Oh, totally.
So much
get fun. That on change.org right away.
I mean, we do need a cause to get behind. There's not enough going on in the world.
The leaders of the jollification movement. What a claim to fame.
So we're fast forwarding about 20 years now. We're in Geauga County, which is also in Ohio. There in Geauga County, the Agricultural and Manufacturing Society organized a county fair to show off new farm tools and equipment and agricultural produce. So they were kind of practical in nature for a while.
Over time, activities and exhibits at fairs broadened to reflect wider interests and were no longer exclusively agricultural-related endeavors, although today they still definitely include a lot of agriculture segments.
Yeah, they still got their roots in hay.
The roots in that rich, fertilized soil.
Yeah, and like mule competitions. I looked at the New York State Fair competitions that you can enter, and the list... I swear there are 100 contests you can enter, and they're extremely specific, like best daffodils. It's amazing.
Well, I feel like now it's not just, you know, livestock. It's more like gardening and cooking. I even saw a mention of quilting.
Yeah.
I did watch a sheep shearing competition in the, I believe, Westchester County County Fair.
Really?
Oh.
Yeah.
My where Ariella originates from.
Fur flying. There was just sheep fur flying everywhere. The sheep did not seem bothered.
Who could shear the sheep the fastest or like in the best shapes?
Could
the
shear best them.
Yeah, like butter sculpture.
It was who could shear them the fastest and like do the most complete job. Like no, you can't leave patches and things. But yeah, it was flying and there were these poor people who were like trying to catch the wool and get it into baskets and move it out of the way.
I have a quick question for everybody. Quick roundtable. Has everybody here been to a state or county fair? And if so, which ones? Let's start with Leah.
Yes, I have. So I grew up in Tennessee and I would go to the Tennessee Valley Fair. So it was definitely all of this livestock showing up, the crafts. There was like iris growing competitions and art. So it was really interesting. And that was
what
also
town
where,
was that in?
This was in Knoxville. Knoxville, Tennessee. So every year they have the Tennessee Valley Fair, and then there'd be little concerts. So usually like old bands would show up and play, and that was the highlight of it. So the Tennessee Valley Fair was like the place to be. And then the LA County Fair when I was out in the LA area.
Of course. Shira, have you been to a county or state fair?
Well, we actually attended one together, Arielle. We went to the Mississippi State Fair in Jackson, Mississippi. And it's funny because the night that we went there, Shawn Mendes was performing.
Yes.
But we were not hip enough to know who Shawn Mendes was. So we didn't go into the tent and see him. We could have seen him for free. Our $5 admission fee to the state fair. We could have seen him for free. We didn't even really know he was there. We just saw a lot of like teens screaming. And we're like, oh, I guess it's probably not for us. And then Ariel's sister texted us after and was like, oh my God, Shawn Mendes was there. And we totally missed it.
Yeah, this was 15,
yeah.
Yeah, so he was but a young lad.
Oh. Yeah, so we really missed an opportunity, I would say. But I did get a donut burger.
Okay, there. Very important.
Worth it.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Worthy sacrifice, honestly. Mm-hmm.
Anna, what about you? Have you been to a county or state fair?
Yes. Well, I grew up in Buffalo, New York, which is in Erie County.
Don't Lake say Erie. It!
Why?
I have something to talk about later in the show about that.
About Buffalo, New York?
Yes, Erie County Buffalo. Fair seems quite famous. That's what I'll
well,
say.
Let's leave it at, yes, you've been to a county fair.
Yes, I've that? Been to a county fair.
Very good.
What about you, Ariel?
I've been to the Mississippi State Fair, and I'm sure I've been to a few more that I can't remember. Oh, I went to the Michigan State Fair. Good times.
Well, before we transition it over to the food section of our county fairs episode, we have a few quick, like fast notes about the differences between county and state fairs.
Yeah, of course, we are here because of the word county. However, later when I bestow upon you some trivia, a lot of the facts are going to be about state fairs. And it just is what it is. We're kind of treating them as one and the same. But there are key differences. Shira.
So county fairs are smaller than state fairs.
That's about it.
There's a few more. County fairs are usually held for 2 to 4 days, whereas state fairs usually last at least a week and can go on for as long as a month.
The Mississippi State Fair, you know, it's a month long, I think.
I think but, around that.
But the state fair grounds are a permanent structure, you know? So the fairgrounds will always be the fairgrounds. And there is always that really long slide, you know, that has like a lot of divots in it. And it stays there all year long. And I just don't understand. It does not get used except for the state fair.
This final fact, which I actually found this one to be the most interesting because I really didn't know this, was that county fairs are run by volunteers. And there are obviously a lot of volunteers who are involved in state fairs, but the overall management for state fairs is in the hands of either a state fair board or a private company. But I guess that makes sense because they're a little bigger. Here we go.
Just here we go.
Our facts again. Thank you to encyclopedia.com for those quick facts.
Oh, what I wanted to do really quick before we close out our section is give the listeners a little something to look forward to because COVID has been tough on all of us. And one of the biggest parts of that has been cancellations of big events. However, it seems like because of the vaccination schedule, we may be getting county and state fairs back. So, New Yorkers, you can head on up to Syracuse between Friday, August 20th, and Monday, September 6th for the Great State of New York Fair. That is, of course, if the vaccinations continue rolling out.
Californians, your party dates are between Saturday, July 17th, 2021, and Monday, August 2nd, 2021 in, I assume that's Sacramento?
Yeah, I made sure to write Sactown.
I'm not Sactown. In Sacramento. I mean, you could go to both.
And then, of course, for a little Midwestern taste, Missouri, your state fair will take place from August 12th to 22nd in Sedalia. So we really could go to all three. They are very evenly spaced throughout the month of August.
And I will encourage our listeners to look up their county fairs or nearby county fairs. we wanted to give you some dates for state fairs so that, you know, we could reach more people. But do your research. Find the fair closest to you and go jollificationify.
Jollificate.
Go jollificate.
Go jollificate.
It sounds disgusting.
Yeah, it doesn't work. I see why they might have changed it to county fair. Well, anyways, go enjoy your jollification.
Your jollies.
Get your jollies.
So Anna and Leah, I'm hungry.
Oh, we're going to make it worse.
Yeah.
We're going to make it worse. We're going to make you even more hungry. To start off, sometimes on Every Day is a Food Day, we like to do lists related to our food subject or topic to kind of get our point across. So I would like to start with a list of the most, let's say, impressive foods that I found on different food lists for fairs. Okay. You ready? Deep fried Oreos, of course. Cheesecake on a stick, Cheeto pie, deep fried Starbucks, deep fried Coca-Cola, corn dogs, bacon encased chocolate on a stick, 10-pound cheese buns, deep fried cheese curds, Krispy Kreme triple cheeseburger, deep fried Slim Fast bar, deep fried peanut butter pickles, bacon fried s'mores on a stick, deep fried Snickers, fried hot sauce, chicken in waffles, deep fried guacamole, corn ice cream, hot beef sundae, and my personal favorite, deep fried butter. Deep fried Slim Fast bar. Like, what's the thinking behind? Is that to make a diet, like a low cal?
Balance.
Yeah, it just balances out.
My stomach literally just growled, so I might need to mute myself. I'm sorry.
So have you guys tried any of those foods at different fairs before? Did any of those ring a bell? Leah's like, check, check, check.
Like, yes.
Mm-hmm. I have had deep fried Oreos, and I think that's it. The rest of them, my jaw was just dropping lower and lower. And then I was like, which one should I bring up after? Huh, that's weird. Which one should I bring up after? And then by the time they all went by, I was like, I am no more fascinated by one than the other. They're all,
you're just equally horrified across the board.
It's fried.
Leah, which ones of those have you tried?
Well, definitely the deep fried Oreos. This sort of like, you know, that was like my entry, my gateway to fair food.
Gateway
drug. Deep fried Oreos, the fried Twinkies, fried pickles, the fried chicken in a waffle. I'll tell you a little bit more about that. So I've had my fair share of fair foods.
We're big on puns here on Every Day is a Food Day. So what about you, Shira?
So of course, deep fried Oreos. I have had the donut burger just because I had to have it. The one that's unique to me is corn dogs. They are one of my favorite food, full stop. And so any opportunity to eat them, which fairs tend, jollifications tend to present an opportunity to eat them, I indulge in a corn dog.
So one question I had when I was looking at all these lists was, how the hell do you fry these things? I mean, how do you fry butter? How do you fry any of these things? And the answer is a combination of freezing the core food and pancake batter.
Mm.
Yeah,
I've heard
so
of
what
flash
you do
by.
Is like, for example, the deep fried butter, which I can barely say without gagging, is freezing a stick of butter and then encasing it in like thickened pancake batter. So then when you fry it, what's inside gets kind of melty and then the pancake batter like toughens up and then you can eat that. So
is one meant to bite into the stick of butter?
I don't know how else you're going to get to it, Ariel. I think you just, yeah. I can't imagine slicing it is going to be quite a mess.
Fork and knife.
Right. You need a full china and crystal spread. Maybe it comes on a stick. There seem to be big fans of sticks, which makes sense. You're walking around, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, I guess
portable.
You put the peanut butter in between the pickles and then roll it in pancake batter, fire up the deep fryer and be on your way. You know, light snack.
Deep fried pickles were something I discovered while living in the South, and they are really good. And
they're
peanut
like
butter,
fries.
They're incredible. And peanut butter would just add protein to it. So it seems like a win-win to me.
We are big on declaring anything a well-balanced meal if you put peanut butter on it.
I learned that in your recent episode, Spread It On Thick with 2 C's. I was very happy to hear.
Justify anything. Put peanut butter on it. Question is, why are these foods so bonkers? And according to a man named George Geary, who's a chef and an author of a book called Fair Foods, the Most Popular and Offbeat Recipes from America's State and County Fairs, every year the fairs get more and more competitive for food vendors. there's more and more vendors, there's more and more people, mm-hmm. and the vendors are trying to get the attention of fairgoers and, of course, their money. And so one way is to try mm-hmm. to top each other. And they top each other by making these more and more, let's say, creative, outrageous foods. But we all talked about the deep fried Oreos. And there's actually one man mm-hmm. who's responsible for the deep fried Oreos and many other of these delicacies. And it made him a star. Leah, do you want to tell us about this gentleman?
Yes, I'm very excited to tell you all about this man, the king of fair foods, Chicken Charlie.
Yes.
He belongs at a jollification. That's all.
He's like the king of jollies. Chicken
Charlie. Is that his Christian name?
Yes, it was given to him. He was blessed.
Was he baptized Chicken Charlie?
He was.
Yeah, he was baptized.
Yes, he was. Uh-huh. Chicken Charlie. Oh, my goodness. So Chicken Charlie is the man behind the deep fried Oreos and things like the Krispy Kreme burger, Krispy Kreme Sloppy Joes, fried bacon wrapped pickles, waffle dogs, wow. fried Klondike bars, the Twinkies, fried Kool-Aid. I don't know how you do that, but he figured that out. So basically every insane fried thing that you find at these fairs leads back to Chicken Charlie.
Wow.
Yeah. So
what a legacy.
I know. So a little bit about Chicken Charlie. I mean, his name is Charlie Boghossian. He is actually an Armenian immigrant. He was born in Syria and his family left there and immigrated to the States when he was a kid back in like 1980. And they ended up settling in San Diego. And when he was a teenager, he got a summer job at the San Diego County Fair because he thought it would be fun to work at a carnival, you know, as a teen, like that's got to be the best thing. And he ended up working at a char-broiled corn stand. And he enjoyed it so much that he worked that job every summer for like the next 12 years. So he worked through the rest of high school. He got through college. He actually graduated with a bachelor's in criminal justice. Chicken Charlie.
I mean, they used to say take a bite out of crime. But this was just a combination.
Oh, maybe that's what he was like trying to do.
Of all of his passions.
So he decided, you know, criminal justice is great and all. But I'm going to take a leap and I want to have my own food trailer and I'm going to sell fried chicken because he just had such a great experience at the fair. And he also, like, he knew where the money was. Like Anna was saying, there's a lot of money to be made as a food vendor at these fairs. So he had his fried chicken trailer, called it Chicken Charlie because it was a cute name. And over the next few years, he took his fried chicken show on the road and he worked a fair, you know, in San Diego, worked in Miami. And while he was in Miami in the early 2000s, he actually saw a man selling the deep fried Twinkies. But here's the deal. He tried it and it didn't taste right. And Chicken Charlie was like, this ain't no good. You can't taste the cream. So Chicken Charlie went back to his own kitchen and experimented and made his own special batter and created a method for perfecting the deep fried Twinkie. So you would have like the crispy, crunchy, golden outside, but still get all of the fun, sugary cream on the inside. And after he made it perfect, he debuted it at the LA County Fair the next year and he sold like 10,000 right away. So then people were like, Chicken Charlie, you know, what is this deep fried Twinkie? What are you going to fry next? And so he knew that he had to step it up. So the next year in 2002, that's when he presented to the world the deep fried Oreo.
That it's that recent?
Yeah.
Oh my God. I thought people had been frying Oreos since the dawn of Oreos.
Well, they could be frying it, but they didn't fry it the way that Chicken right. Charlie fried it and made it like super popular. And then the year after that, he just had to keep upping his game. Now he's like chasing this thing, right? So he had, you know, deep fried avocados. He did a deep fried Krispy Kreme chicken sandwich where he'd actually taken a raspberry filled donut, sliced it in half, and then stuffed it with a seasoned chicken breast. And he's so serious about frying his food that he is known to have like 20 different batters that he uses, depending on the thing that he's frying, because it's got to be just right. For instance, like with the deep fried Oreos and some of the Twinkie things, he has like his own special batter just for that versus the meat. So he's an expert at this. He's been doing this now, you know, I mean, since he started working at the fair when he was a kid, and he's basically built an empire as the king of the deep fryer. And he grew his business so much that he opened up his own test kitchen. And now he has a restaurant in Rancho Bernardo, so north of San Diego. Anna, you can go visit that.
His website looks amazing. Like, it makes me hungry. Website.
You can spot like the Chicken Charlie at any fair that you're at because he has like, you know, this towering stand, you know, with flags and banners that have pictures of the food on it. I mean, I went to the LA County Fair just to go get Chicken Charlie's fried food. The last time I was there, that's where I got the fried buffalo chicken and mac and cheese in a waffle.
Wow.
And it was amazing. He'd really figured it out. It was like already portable. You could eat the, you know, container that your food was in. It was so good.
Wow.
Yes.
Yeah.
I also love that Chicken Charlie was an immigrant. And immigrants are so vital to our country. We wouldn't have any of this amazing fried food without Charlie. So thank you, Charlie.
Thank you,
Chicken
Charlie.
I'm a little worried about his cholesterol. Do we need to go fund me for his Lipitor?
That's a slim fast bar.
I also wonder, like, if you work in this industry, obviously you have to taste all this stuff, but it's probably, like, I feel like you, at a certain point, don't eat it as much. Like, you're so used to it being around. Or maybe you eat it all the time. It really could go either way.
It could. I mean, I missed getting fair food last year. So this year, I'm really hoping to...
It's coming back.
...to get some. They did drive-thrus last year, though.
Oh.
So, like, in Texas, at the Texas State Fair, they ended up doing, like, a drive-thru experience that was really just geared towards the foodies. Because this is such a, you know, foodie, almost like Instagram food thing that people really want to go to the fair to get pictures of these crazy concoctions. So the Texas State Fair had this like ticket package that you could buy where you could drive through and get food from your favorite concession stands and then even have like pictures at the end of it with your food.
That's a pretty impressive pivot. I will say, I think I ordered the donut burger to take a photo of it. Nothing about it honestly sounds that appealing to me.
Do you have that photo?
Yeah, it's on my Instagram.
I'm going to pull it up.
If you might have taken it because I see sure my fingers in it. Great photography.
I'm pretty sure that before the Mississippi State Fair, we were like, what pictures can we take of ridiculous food?
Oh, what food should we pick?
I totally had to post my picture of the chicken in the mac and cheese and the waffle cone.
Of course.
As well.
I bet you they're starting to take that into consideration too when they're coming up with these recipes. It's like, what's the most, you don't want just like a pile of brown fried goo. You want something that's like, looks pretty incredible.
Right.
It's Insta-worthy.
Oh, for sure. I mean, imagine like your Chicken Charlie or another one of these food vendors. So I know in Texas, like you've got to apply to be a vendor at these spaces. And then if you get accepted, you have like 2 or 3 weeks of work and millions of people will go by. And if you can sell like corn dogs for $5 a pop, you can make like a couple million bucks that week.
That's insane.
Yeah. It's very important to be at the top of your frying game.
I could get into the oil biz.
Yeah.
Big oil.
So obviously there are a lot of really crazy foods that come out of these fairs, but a lot of new innovations have been coming out of fairs, world's fairs, for a long time now. I mean, take, for instance, the World's Fair back in 1893 that we've talked about on Every Day is a Food Day.
Yeah, the 1893 Chicago World's Fair is kind of like the OG fair that premiered a ton of foods that now we like don't even think about. They're just in our everyday lives. And it was the site of a lot of firsts that weren't food related, like the first zippers, first chewing gum, spray paint, automatic dishwasher, the first Ferris wheel, switchboards, the first moving sidewalk, which cost 5 cents to ride. And of course, it wasn't a county fair. I don't know if it was actually a world's fair either. It was somewhere in the middle. But the foods that came out of there are definitely worth mentioning because it's where a lot of foods first got a wide audience, which is how they went from being kind of regional specialties to spreading nationally. And it definitely set a precedent for fairs being a place where food was a focus. So here are a couple examples that we've talked about. So the first one is peanut butter, which Ariel mentioned earlier.
No way.
So Dr. John Harvey Kellogg, you might have heard of his little cereal company. He ran a sanatorium and he was a huge health and, you know, wellness proto-wellness guy, along with his wife, Ella, who was a dietitian and a nutritionist who came up with a lot of these recipes. But he was obsessed with peanut butter because he saw it as a great source of protein for the elderly or sick who couldn't chew, or the underprivileged, the poor, who couldn't afford meat. So he brought peanut butter to the World's Fair as this kind of like nutrition wonder food, which is where it really caught on. Another one is popcorn. And popcorn comes up twice at the World's Fair. So in our popcorn episode, we talked about a man named Charles Kreeters, who invented the first mobile popcorn machine, which he debuted at the World's Fair. So he bought a peanut cart And then he attached a steam engine to it and invented a contraption that would pop the popcorn in salt and oil. And also, it's said that German brothers Frederick and Louis Ruchheim debuted a caramel-covered popcorn snack that they would eventually call Cracker Jack.
Huh.
Mm-hmm.
So much.
Another
one, a bit messier, is chili, specifically Texas red chili or a version of chili con carne. So that's the chili that is based in a paste with meat. There's no beans. Big rivalry. So our chili episode, we talked about the chili queens from San Antonio, Texas. So they were these women who set up chili stands and chili carts in Military Plaza, which is the site of the Alamo. Hashtag never forget. They traveled to the World's Fair with their own chili stands as well. So you can see, keeps popping up. And here's some other foods we haven't talked about, but still,
so much innovation,
so much widespread.
Yeah.
Widespread exposure. Here's some other funny ones that came up. Pabst Blue Ribbon. Pabst Blue Ribbon debuted at the World's Fair. And on their can, they have a blue ribbon, and it says, selected as America's best since 1893, which is the year of the fair.
Oh my God, that's so cool.
They were not actually selected until 1894. In 1893, Budweiser won. But then it came out that a German judge had been bribed.
Oh my God.
So they rescinded Budweiser's award, gave it to PBR, and the rest is history.
That's insane.
Shira, you have a personal connection to PBR.
Do you know this already?
I do. It's a Jewish personal connection. I know everything.
I'm more confused and surprised that you know it. My great-grandfather was, I believe, he was the first Jewish PBR salesman in the U.S.
Salesman.
And he's who I'm named for. So PBR and I go way back.
Wow.
Do they have
a picture
of you as a baby just holding a PBR can?
But very exciting. And I'm very proud of it.
The last one was Heinz ketchup and mustard. So this story is really interesting. Heinz ketchup and mustard was given a booth on the second floor of the exhibition. So they were getting no foot traffic. Like, no one was coming by their booth. So they decided to make up little pins shaped like pickles that said Heinz on them. And then they had their, you know, booth workers or whoever go out and tell people, if you come up to the Heinz booth, you'll get a pin. And, like, millions of people went to the booth. It's the swag.
People want the swag. So much so
that they were on the second floor, right? The ceiling started to sag under where their booth was because so many people went to get their pins. So the Heinz brothers may have invented swag. That's all I'm saying. Did you guys hear there's a ketchup packet shortage right now?
Yeah. Is that a COVID situation?
It's toilet paper, bucatini, and ketchup packets. All these restaurants switched from table service to takeout.
Mm.
So bottles are no more. And they're sending their ketchup packets home. So people, save your ketchup packets. Precious.
Did you know that in fourth grade, I made my first AOL screen name and it was Ketchup Kid Rel? Ketchup Kid R-E-L.
I didn't. I'm so glad I do now.
Oh,
yeah.
That's adorable. I don't like ketchup. So we get these ketchup packets and then we like save them just because we feel bad throwing them out. But I don't want them. So the restaurants, when I say I don't want ketchup, they should.
Well, now you can just hoard it and maybe sell it on eBay. Whole new revenue stream for you. So those are a few of the foods that came out of the 1893 Chicago World's Fair and set the precedent for food debuts. So, Leah, you are probably the most adventurous of all of us in terms of trying these foods. What's your favorite one?
Okay, so I love all of those deep fried foods. This is probably terrible for me to say. But I have to say, there's a food that came out of the 1982 World's Fair that was held in my hometown of Knoxville, Tennessee. Let me tell you a little bit about the 1982 World's Fair. So that was such a big deal because Knoxville is a very tiny town. Like, the Wall Street Journal thought that the town was too small. It wouldn't be able to handle a World's Fair. But it did. Ronald Reagan, like, opened up the ceremonies. And even the president of the Philippines at the time, Ferdinand Marcos and Imelda Marcos were in Knoxville. And that World's Fair was, the theme was all about, like, energy. Texaco had actually debuted their pay at the pump technology. at that World's Fair. Wow. So that was a really big deal. And then when it came to food, Cherry Coke was debuted at that fair too. And this thing called the Petro was created and invented and sold at this fair. So the full name was the Petroleum Belly. And that's probably what your belly feels like. This thing. But it's essentially chili and chips. So a couple from Washington State had a food stand that they would serve like a bowl of chili and corn chips. It's kind of like a Frito pie, you know, where you would just dump chili into an open bag of Fritos. But they kicked it up a notch by adding all sorts of toppings to it. So it sort of made it fancier. You could add like extra cheese, tomatoes, green onions, sour cream. You can make it spicy with hot sauce, jalapenos, and all of that. Well, it got really popular at that World's Fair. And it grew like much like Chicken Charlie. It got so popular, they took it on the road. So then they went to the New Orleans World's Fair in 1984, and it exploded there. And this couple, seeing like the business opportunity, decided that they needed to trademark the name, the Petro, and then start to franchise it. So a couple of brothers from Knoxville ended up buying the Petro franchise and starting their first one in the mall there. And I remember as a little kid, like, you wanted to go to Westtown Mall because it was the place that had the Petro's chili and chip stand. And it was the only spot that had it at the time in the mid-80s. And that is like one of my favorite fair foods ever. And every time I go back home, I always have to stop and get a Petro. And you can get it like piled high with olives and all kinds of things on top. It's super delicious. But yeah, that came out of the 1982 World's Fair in Knoxville, Tennessee.
But have you ever tried to make it on your own, or is it like sacred? It would never be the same.
I do make it, but it still just isn't the same. There's something that's missing, and I don't know what it is. So I've tried, and it must be something in like their special chili like seasoning recipe.
They don't tell
that
them.
I can't capture it.
Motor oil.
It's actually petroleum. It was legit petroleum, guys.
So that's, you know, a potential concern.
Yeah. They got it in like a syringe or a big squeeze bottle. They're just like
someone in the back just like pumping that into the bowl.
Sometimes it's better not to know. I think it's called Portillo's. I'm probably getting it so wrong. In Chicago, they have this cake shake that's incredible, and apparently the secret ingredient is mayo or something like that.
You just don't want to know.
It's so good. But I don't know. Honestly, I haven't fact-checked that. I don't know if that's true at all.
No, but there are rumors like that around all of our favorite foods, and I think the sentiment stands. Here we are justifying what you said, but Portillo's. We go there for the mayo.
Okay, I won't lie. I just typed in Portillo's.
Is that a cheesesteak place?
Yeah, it says beef, like, burger, salad.
Yeah.
Salad.
And salad.
According to the internet, in an article from 42 minutes ago, that's wild. Someone is reading our minds, ladies. It does seem like there is mayo in it. Oh. So that's pretty crazy.
Still, I would take a sponsorship. Portillo's, hit us up.
Oh, the shake was delicious. I'm sorry, was that not clear?
Worth it.
I mean, I also love mayo, so no shade to mayo. I was just surprised.
We talked about maybe making some fair foods at home. Shira, you've got something special waiting for you in your freezer.
Well, one of my frozen food staple items for when I don't feel like cooking is Trader Joe's frozen turkey corn dogs. Unfortunately, we're not sponsored by Trader Joe's. This isn't
it. Sounds
ad.
Like we are.
Trader Joe's, call
this
us.
This is truly call a personal us, passion. Joe's. Yeah, absolutely. This is really just a personal passion. I think that their frozen turkey corn dogs are the best frozen item at Trader Joe's. And obviously they have a lot of competition, similar to the fair, a lot of great frozen foods. And it feels like a healthier way to eat a corn dog on a consistent basis. The trick is 1 minute in the microwave and then like 10 minutes in the toaster oven. This is something that people get confused about. I've actually had coworkers Slack me about this before on like perfecting it. So yeah, just highly encourage everyone to try them. Get your fair fix whenever you want.
I love a food strategy. Leah and I love food strategies. Gotta have them. All right. Leah, what did you cook?
Ladies, I cooked deep fried mac and cheese balls.
I'm hungry.
What I did, taking a note from Chicken Charlie, I had my mac and cheese, so I made it yesterday. And then I had to get it like, you know, kind of cold and firm in order to form the balls. And then from there, I decided not to do the pancake batter, but I like coated it. I dredged it in like an egg wash and then panko. And then I dipped it again. So it's like double dipped, and then fried it all up in a little ball.
Have you had yet?
I have. Of course, I had to try it. I used shells and cheese, so that way the shells could, you know, hold more of that cheese.
Well, they're round like the ball. Then, makes sense.
Yeah, so it like was easier to shape. So here we go.
Wow, this sounds so satisfying. Yeah.
So I made this right before we started taping.
I feel like you nailed the frying. It really had a good crunch, given that it's got some cheese inside of there.
It's got a great crunch outside. It's nice and cheesy on the inside. It's golden brown. It's pretty delicious, guys. I gotta say, I'm quite impressed with myself.
Did you take photos?
Excellent. I did take photos.
Okay, very good. We'll post them on on our Instagram, and also I'm sure the Food Day ladies will do so as well. They're gorgeous.
Oh, beautiful. Thank you.
That way you can all salivate along with us.
Because I'm an Asian cook, I was like using chopsticks and my wok strainer to like cook it up, which is an excellent way to deep fry anything. Anna. So what did you, the foodlosopher, make?
Yes. I am not a chef. All of our regular Food Day listeners will know that I am not the chef either on our show or in my home. So this is always an adventure when I try to cook something. But I was very fascinated because my partner succumbed to the air fryer craze during COVID.
That sentence was almost very scary.
Why?
He succumbed to during COVID. It could have been bad.
Don't worry, everyone.
I too.
The air fryer. Yeah.
Well, his
love language, as I say, his love language is gadgets. So the house is full of them, and he's the chef. So we got an air fryer. And so as we were talking about making fair food, I wanted to see what it would be like to make one of these things in the air fryer. So I made air fried
oranges. What do they look like?
Yeah.
Can you describe
them? So they are golden brown, but it's sort of like a deep pancake color all the way around. They don't have the kind of crispness that you would get from frying it in oil. Like it doesn't have like sharp edges or anything like that, or the crispness. It really looks like a mound of dough with powdered sugar on top, and inside there's an Oreo.
And it's healthy, right?
It's so healthy. Obviously, if you dyed it, if you fried it in oil, because I did these last night, because when you have a food podcast, sometimes you find yourself air frying Oreos at 11 o'clock at night. And they're not oily or greasy at all, because I air fried them. So should I bite into one of these things?
Yes.
No, I had one last night, and my partner was like, ew, I don't want to eat those. And then he had like three for breakfast.
Right. Those look awesome, Anna.
Oh my God, my heart just skipped a beat.
The recipe I used had me put extra, I think, milk in it to make it thicker. Would it be milk or an egg that would make it thicker? Again, not a chef, don't know. I'm assuming milk and or the egg made it a little thicker. And vanilla into the pancake batter. So it kind of tastes like a vanilla cupcake or like a vanilla muffin with an Oreo stuck in the middle.
That sounds amazing.
There is a place down the road from me that sells fried Oreos all year round. I've lived in this area for a while. I feel like I might have to go on an excursion.
I also use mega stuffed Oreos. The regular Oreos seemed a little too thin. And even then, the batter gets so thick that I was like just putting the Oreo in and trying to cover it. But then the Oreos were crumbling, which was tragic. So I ended up just sort of like holding the Oreo and like scooping up the batter and painting it onto the sides of the Oreo to coat it. Sad that I now know how to make those. All right. So that's what we have to say about fair food.
Now I think we're all caught up on the history of fairs, the food history of fairs. And with that, let's test our knowledge. How do we feel about some trivia, ladies?
I'm down for it.
Yeah.
Okay. So I am scrolling to the point on our Google Doc that says trivia danger zone that in theory, nobody else has looked at. Can I get a swearing-in ceremony? Has everybody remained faithful to the trivia cause? Oh, thank you for doing this. We're not a visual podcast.
I have not entered the trivia danger zone. I swear on my cat.
Very good. I will now enter the trivia danger zone. And I've got six questions. And I'm thinking that the way it's going to work is we will have, since we have three people, usually it's just Shira. If you think you know the answer, you're going to buzz in verbally. You'll say buzz, and then you'll have a chance to wager a guess. If you are correct, you'll get the point. If you are not correct, we'll move on to the next buzz.
Just points and everything.
Sound good?
I'm excited to have some competition, although I'm not good at trivia, so it tends to be better for me when it's just me playing against myself.
Oh, I'm terrible. I know a lot of useless things, but it's never the right useless stuff.
Lucky for you, all of our trivia was plucked from the first or second search results when you Google State Fair fun facts. So you might have come across it. Here we go. Question number one. In 2015, nearly 41% of what state's population attended their state
buzz.
Fair? Was that Anna? Anna, go ahead.
Iowa.
Incorrect. Do I have a second buzz? To get almost 50% of a state's population to their state fair is nuts. So we're thinking probably a not so densely populated state.
Buzz.
Go ahead, Shira.
I'm going to guess Nebraska.
No, but it rhymes with that.
Alaska.
Oh, Alaska is correct.
I kind of cheated because I didn't rebuzz, but whatever.
I love it.
That's crazy, though. Still to be like
great turnout.
Nearly half. Yeah.
Really great turnout. Fun fact for you, Alaska State Fair takes place in Palmer, Alaska, which is in the larger Anchorage Metropolitan Statistical Region, and the National Tsunami Warning Center is also located in Palmer.
Fascinating. Hmm.
Question number two, how are we feeling?
Sweaty.
Okay, me too. I shouldn't be. Question number two. At this state fair, 1 million cookies are baked fresh every day at a rate of 80,500 cookies every 12 minutes at Sweet Martha's. These cookies are served by the bucketful.
Buzz.
Shira.
Minnesota.
Minnesota is correct. How did you know that?
Because my friend is from Minnesota and I've heard about these cookies. Like, my friends went with her to home to Minnesota to go to the state fair to eat Sweet Martha's cookies.
Yeah. There's a YouTube video on the churning of the batter. It looks incredible.
That's good.
So that's Minnesota. And did you know that musician Miranda Lambert is set to perform at this year's Minnesota State Fair with special guest TBA?
I love them.
TBA is awesome.
They're so good.
Shawn Mendes. So don't even worry about it.
Question number three. This state fair is the oldest in the country, and its 13-day run always ends on Labor Day.
Buzz.
Shira.
New York.
You are correct, Shira. You are correct.
Shira.
Because you said the date before of the New York State Fair, and that's Labor Day.
Oh,
she's
never do this well.
She's using her context clues. Very, very good.
Normally, I panic under pressure. Wow.
Shira, you're killing it.
Are you sure you didn't go past the trivia date?
I promise. You know I never cheat on that, Arielle.
No,
yeah.
You're
no
a
way.
Follower.
So impressed. Come on, Leah.
All right.
You can do this.
Question number four. This state's fair usually takes place in February. It was once called the Midwinter Festival, and it has over 100 rides.
Somewhere warm?
Good clue. Yes.
With 100 rides?
Including 6 roller coasters, if that helps you narrow it down.
Buzz?
Shira, yes.
California?
No, not California.
Okay.
All right.
Sorry to bring
two
you
states
down.
Leah. I got 48 to guess from.
Buzz, Arizona.
Unfortunately, no, but I will give a hint. It is a state that is also known as the Sunshine State.
Oh, Buzz,
state.
Florida.
Leah. Leah, Florida. Yes, correct. I decided to give it to you. As long as you know the nicknames, you're good to go. Question number five, here we go. The Eastern States Exposition, which takes place yearly in West Springfield, Massachusetts, is nicknamed the Big E because it's a joint event between these 6 New England states. What are the states of New England?
Buzz.
Anna.
Vermont, New Hampshire, Maine, Massachusetts, Connecticut, Rhode Island.
Yes, correct.
Yes.
Anna, you're on the board.
I can name the states of New England.
Despite its multiple participants, the Big E, this fair that I'm referring to, it's considered a state fair and even refers to itself as New England's Great State Fair. So it sounds really fun just bringing the 6 New England states together for a reunion.
They're all very close together.
Yeah, they should come together. One last question. I'm ending on a 6th question because I realized that the above 5 questions were all about state fairs, and we are here for county fairs, so I figured I'd end it on a county note. This county fair is larger than its state's fair, both in terms of attendance and some say even in notoriety. It takes place in a suburb of Buffalo, and the only county fair larger than it is the San Diego County Fair. Which is this county fair?
Buzz. Erie yes, County ahead. County Fair. As someone who grew up in the
and was it
suburb
awesome?
Of Buffalo, New York. Yeah, it was great. I didn't go on a ton of the rides, but I loved the food. It, you know, just so we're clear, there is a separate Buffalo Wing Festival, Buffalo Wing Fair specifically. So this wasn't just wings. It's so good. People come from all over. And there's a lot of Polish people, Polish descendants in Buffalo. So there's a ton of like pierogies, kielbasa, the Butterlams. Are you guys aware of the Butterlams? I don't know why. It's a Polish or Polish immigrant delicacy is little figurines of lambs carved out of butter. Butterlams.
I absolutely love pierogies. I love anything with potatoes in particular. But pierogies are definitely one of my favorite varieties of potato.
Gotta stop by.
I'm heading to Erie County, I guess.
We should go.
You guys can stay with my mom.
Erie County. Oh, my God. It's a county trip. Yeah. So that's it. That's the end of the trivia danger zone. Thank you all for playing. I believe Shira has 3 points, Anna has 2, and Leah has 1. So good job, everybody, for getting on the board.
Yay. Thank you, Ariel. That was awesome. This has been a co-production of Counter Programming and Every Day is a Food Day.
If you're a regular listener of Counter Programming, thank you for joining us.
If you're a regular listener of Every Day is a Food Day, thanks for joining us.
Thank you to Daniel Turk, who makes Counter Programming sound so great.
Today, we thank you both from the counter perspective and the kitchen counter perspective.
And shout out to our Food Day interns, Emma Massey and Elaine O.
Now, go subscribe to Every Day is a Food Day to hear more food stories from Anna and Leah. Their second season drops on May 4th. May the 4th be with them.
Thanks, Shira. And if you're a regular Food Day listener, head on over to that Counter Programming feed to learn more counter wisdom from Shira and Ariel.
From our kitchen countertops to yours. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.